Hi, I'm Delene Allen, the networking queen. I love to connect people. There is nothing more wonderful than the human connection, the connection that can lead to incredible things, to love, to business, to make our lives just so much richer, meeting and connecting on a deeper level than, hi, here's my business card. But making those human connections that can take you to magical places. Stay tuned for Network Equals Net Worth. I want to hear your stories. I want to share your stories. So good afternoon. It's Delene Allen. Network Equals Net Worth. Making connections and sharing stories. Angela Belaychuk from SciDev. Let me tell you about this woman. She is a connector extraordinaire. And when you hear her story, you're going to have a real chuckle. She could write a book. There really was a theme in her early life of bad work experiences, and never really had that one person. She never had that one person who she might call a mentor. She took one great piece of advice from a bad person. That one bit of advice turned out to be life-changing. Number one, I'm so glad, not that you had a bad experience, but that you actually took a piece of advice and did something with us. There are many people who offer bits of advice, and sometimes we don't take it. But anyway, Angela from Kejama.
Kushaboo-guak.
I love it. I love that. That should be worked into a song that has such a great song. So tell us about the early life of growing up and then the adventure of a lifetime being married to a military officer.
Well, growing up in Kushaboo-guak was a real blessing, actually. Like, I started pretty young in a multi-generational household. I had my great-grandmother, my grandmother, and my parents all under one roof for a few years. And, you know, as a kid, that is such a blessing, because when you come home from school, there's always somebody there to talk to and who is interested in what you have to say. They make you feel special and loved, you know, and in a small town, everybody knows everybody. My mom was the school bus driver, so there was no way in heck that I could do anything wrong, because she was going to find out about it. So it kind of keeps you on the straight and narrow, and that's not a bad thing. But also, growing up in a small community, you always know that you're going to leave. If you want to have an opportunity or do something with your life, it's an automatic given that you are going to go. And not to say that people can't have a beautiful life, you know, within a small town, they certainly can. But I just didn't see that as part of my future. So off I went to university. And at the end of my university days is when I met my future husband. And so James was finishing up his training at Base Gagetown. We met, we fell in love very quickly. We moved in together, we lived in Sin. And then we got married, and, you know, our adventure together started from there. Yeah.
And so many, many places. And I identify with that. My husband, Joe, worked at the Coast Guard College, and in just under 10 years, we moved about 17 times, not always to a different place, but I always felt I could write a resume and how to get through an interview.
For sure. You know, for us, we moved every 2 years. And so every 2 years, you knew you were going to be looking for a new job. Like, that was just part of the gig, right? So you kind of had to be good at positioning yourself with whatever job was going to be there. And we weren't going to glamorous places. You know, we were living in Oromocto and Petawawa, you know. So here we are, this young couple. We've got no kids. We're footloose and fancy free. We would have gone absolutely anywhere the military sent us. But we ended up in these small communities where jobs, you know, were not plentiful. You had to take what you could get. You're lucky to get a job at all. And in those days, I was in my early 20s and I was still regularly getting carded. So I looked like a 15-year-old kid. I had a university education. Nobody was going to take me seriously. I was just happy to get any kind of entry-level job, right? And so that's what I did. I took those jobs. And not all of them were great, but they were jobs. And I think sometimes the best teachers in life can even be bad people, and bad experiences can be some of the best teachers that we can have. And I think I've had lots of those.
Wow. Well, and when you think about it, though, every 2 years, you kind of know, okay, it's not that permanent. But number one, every 2 years to go to a totally different place, you had to get good at getting to meet people if you wanted, number one, to have some friends, because your hubby wasn't home all the time. But more important, to always be looking for that job. Tell us about the first guy and what he kind of did for you.
So one of the first jobs that I had was on base Gagetown. And I don't know if you can hear my dog barking in the background. I'm sorry about it. Can't really do a whole lot about it unless That's you want okay. me to head out. And it was a clerical term position. It was a really interesting experience because I basically was working for six men that were like my dad. And, you know, some great advice that we got from that group of men was, hey, you kids, you might think you can't afford a house, but the first chance you have to get one, make sure that you buy one. So I worked there for a couple years as a term employee on a casual contract with D&D. And he knew that my officer commanding knew that we were going to be posted, and he was putting in the paperwork to make that position full-time permanent, but he held it back and didn't offer it to me. And he saved it for the next term temporary person who came in. So that person walked into a full-time permanent job. I had been there for 2 years and I was, you know, out on the street again looking for something. But you know, maybe that was a good thing because it forced me to go out and do different things, right?
Exactly. And yeah. So what was the next you've added to that story?
So I figured at that point in time, you know, like this was like late 90s, early 2000, IT was really an up and coming profession. People were getting all like freaked out about Y2K. And I retrained as an IT support specialist. I was a Novell network administrator and I got a job on the base. And like, I was like, this is amazing. And I was part of a team that was doing some prep work for the transition to Y2K, you know, like the world was going to end, right? But sadly, it was like this unit within the base, the officer commanding there just kind of wanted to build an empire on paper and say, I've got these staff members in these positions, but there was actually no work for us. So we were a team of five people, all like myself, brand new IT specialists. We were in this, you know, room in this building, and we each literally were given about 3 hours of work to do per week. Like there was like nothing to do. My colleagues were completely content to sit there and play solitaire all day, chit chat, drink coffee. I literally felt like I was starting to go insane. I just couldn't stand like not being productive. I'd sit there and go, well, if they're wasting my time here, I got like a mountain of laundry to do at home. I could do something else. Made some attempts to self-teach myself some database, you know, stuff. Got so far with it. I was able to build a database for a friend of mine who is a medical doctor, and she still to this day is using it as her CRM. But, you know, you were just kind of in this like whole on your own. And another opportunity came along and I'm like, I'm getting the heck out of here. And I'm going for this other opportunity that has now crossed my path. And that was another crazy ride. So I was introduced in a social setting to this young woman. She was like charming, charismatic, intelligent, like she could sweep anyone off their feet, just absolutely extraordinary. And she had been working in the IT consulting world for some time. She was set up as a numbered company doing some consulting. She had some contacts and she was starting this little startup on her own. And she said, why don't you come and work with me? And I'm like, well, I hate my job. So like, there's a hard decision. Meanwhile, my friends were saying, what, you're leaving like security, benefits, paid vacation. Your work is like walking distance. And now you're going to commute like 2 hours to go and work in Ottawa for a startup, working, you know, all kinds of crazy hours. You don't know where this is going. And I'm like, yeah, definitely. That sounds great because I'm going to be working, be busy, be learning something, do something different. And that was, all of that was true. But it came with a catch. This woman was, and I hate to use the word because it sounds like, you know, exaggerating. This woman was a full-on sociopath, like just off the deep end. And so that was like early 2000 timeframe. And just to give it validity, late last year, you know, she crosses my mind from time to time, like, I wonder what she's doing. And I just went online and searched her. And I found that she's been indicted with like over 90, oh, what's that called? Incidents of fraud for a company that she had been working, doing some military contracts in Africa. So I'm like, yeah, the woman was nuts. So wow. She.
But isn't it interesting though, that worst thing, and Angela, could have actually been in many ways, like, no, you don't ever wish that on anybody. The fact that you put up with it for 2 years also shows me that you obviously believed in something that she was doing, even though it was like, and it usually takes 2 years for the true colors to come through. But look at what you gained from that horrible experience.
Well, I learned a ton. And the other thing I learned too is that, like, my husband always says that I can be very naive. I can trust people too easily. And it gave me a really good sense of seeing people for who they are and what they are very, very quickly. That I would say was the biggest takeaway that I got there. And I did get a window into, you know, how bidding on jobs worked and, you know, running a company. We were an incorporated company. So there were a lot of valuable lessons in that experience for sure.
Well, and same thing, only 3.5 hours worth of work a week, yeah, I would go crazy too. Exactly. So unfortunately, you went to work with crazy, but it's still, it was a benefit because look what you did after that.
So after that, I had always wanted to sell real estate. Like, my husband was in the military, we were moving, we were buying and selling, we were buying old crappy houses, fixing them up and then selling them. And that was going great. And I had even looked into it. I started the process of getting licensed really early on. But I very quickly realized that the perception of my age was going to be an issue, because I tell you, I looked young for my age. And I'll tell you a story. The first house that we sold, it was just a few weeks before our move out date, and there was a knock on a door, and this woman presented herself, and she looked at me and she said, is your mother home? And I said, I am the woman of the house. And she paused and looked at me, and then we started the conversation, and she said, well, I've bought your house and, you know, really like it and excited to move in. And there we went. So that was a handicap to becoming a realtor, right? Plus we were still moving every few years, and it's not a very portable business. It's a business that you really need to be in one geographic area to make it work well. So when I left the crazy lady, I'll call her the crazy lady, I'm like, you know what, this is the right time in my life. I've got some money saved up to carry me through until I start, you know, making some sales. We were in Ottawa, which was like a fantastic city to sell real estate in. Like, you could not ask for a better opportunity. I now looked, you know, old enough to be selling real estate finally. So that's what I did. And look, I loved that business. I thrived in it. And this was where I took good advice from another sociopath, right? But I had just seen the sociopath number one. So when I saw number two, I could recognize that she was another one. Okay. But that didn't mean that her advice wasn't good. And it was go and work at Royal LePage Performance Realty, get into their Pretoria office. Don't even look anywhere in the city else. Don't shop around for which broker is going to give you the best split. None of that. She said, in the long run, it doesn't matter. Just go to that office. And so I got into that office, and I tell you, that was, nothing could have been truer. The culture in there was something that almost doesn't even exist in the real estate world. So like some of the top performers in real estate in the country are in that office. They're generous with their time in terms of like giving you suggestions on what to do, how to build your business, to build you up and say you can do it, all that kind of stuff. It was not like the cutthroat environment that people think that it is. The leadership of the management team there was like off the charts. I mean, the company is often listed in the top 100 places to work in Canada. So it's a great company. It's a great, great company. And I was there for nearly 15 years. And like I say, just amazing, amazing experience. I loved it.
Well, but in the top 10% and the top 5% for the country, wow. And you know, culture, what a difference that makes, doesn't it? And same thing, that when you're working in performance-based organizations, the culture usually is a lot more positive. And again, Angela, you said something really important back there. Number one, you know, that man that denied you a full-time job at D&D, even though you'd done a phenomenal job for the couple of years that you worked for him, that you might have stayed in D&D, because the longer you're in there with, you know, all of those things that you said, the health benefits, the paid vacations, the pension plan and things like that. But unbeknownst to you, that was not the path. So somebody was looking out for you. And same thing, that I've worked for a few crazies in my lifetime too. And same thing, you know, you initially go in there because you love that energy, which if they could just keep it that pure would be wonderful, but there's usually some ulterior motives, whatever, that some of the best life lessons that whatever. And so take us now, that you did real estate, and how did you find connections? That would be, because really, if you think about that, one of the things I love about the military is, much as it's your whole life, there still is networks and connections, aren't there?
The military is a family. Yeah, it's so true. And that was definitely our experience there. When I was a new military wife, just leading up to our wedding, one of the, I called him the crusty old fart at the mess, senior colonel, you know, who'd been there, done that. And he approached me, and he came to congratulate me on our engagement. And he said, so you're marrying the military, he said to me. And I thought, who in the heck does he think he is? And I said, no, I'm marrying James. James happens to be in the military. And he rolled his eyes at me, and I rolled my eyes back at him. But now, you know, moving forward, there was a lot of wisdom in what he
exactly
said.
Exactly. Yeah. And for, let's say, the good and the bad, that being able to make those lifelong connections, that, and because military people do just exactly what you said, move around, being able to still have connections or a sense of community in other things. And certainly with all of those moves, because you strike me, and we talked about this earlier, that, you know, being the outgoing, you know, hi, how are you, wasn't necessarily in your nature. But when we're in a situation of, I either find a friend today or I'm not going to get a friend today, and that you put yourself out there, it does get easier, doesn't it, Angela?
Oh my God, nothing could be truer. So when I was a new Army wife, my husband always said, you know, the social part of this is a big part of the job. I'm really expected as an officer to participate in it. And I would like you to do it too, but you don't have to. And I took the attitude of, well, I could stay home by myself if I want to, or I could go to the mess with him and I might have a good time. I won't know unless I go. And so that's what I decided to do. We'd go to the mess, and we'd get into the front door, And I wouldn't see my husband all night long. He'd be off with the boys, you know, doing their thing. And it was kind of like sink or swim. But I wasn't the only woman in that situation. There were others too, of course.
Exactly.
And yeah, exactly. And, you know, it was really an environment that helped people forge lifelong friendships through exactly. these social interactions. Yeah, incredible.
And tell them about the person who came over to your house because they knew you were there and helped you in a lot of ways.
Oh my gosh. It's such a great story. She's not on this earth anymore. It was such a tragedy. But our first posting, the Army Wives, they were not very endearing. They were kind of like the typical, stereotypical mean, nasty girls, you know? So then our first posting, I didn't know what to expect. But what I experienced was the exact opposite. So here we are, young couple, we're in our first house, we're doing some renovating, my husband's gone all the time. And this woman, she comes to me, she teaches me how to make curtains, which I didn't know how to sew a straight stitch to save my life. She told me where to buy the best and the cheapest fabric. And then she loaned me her sewing machine. And she said, you just keep that for as long as you need. And I was like, wow, like I've died and gone to heaven, you know? And the girls at that unit at that time, we started doing our own Friday night thing when the boys were doing their Friday night thing. And what ended up happening is we were having more fun than the boys and they'd leave the mess early and come to the girls' party.
I love it.
We had a great group. Yeah. Oh, and it made all the difference in the world.
Yeah. So, but like anything else, when you're new to an area, you could have stayed home, but you made sure that you got out. And even if some people were mean, there's always somebody else. But there was another story you told that really touched me. You showed up at an event because you were used to your hubby being away and doing all the stuff. But tell us about the Family Resource Center and what the commanding officer said.
Oh, so that is one of my favorite stories from our time in the military. And the boys were getting ready to deploy to Bosnia. And the commanding officer at the time, and I think it's okay if I name that individual, was Walt Natinchuk. He was my husband's commanding officer at the time. And he said, you know, we're going to have a meeting of everyone who's going to be deployed, spouses, guys, the whole thing. Want you to come and just talk about what's going to take place. And he started sharing how they had all these family support initiatives in place for the wives who were going to be on their own, and very well intentioned and fantastic that those things were there, right? But in my head, I was sitting there thinking, oh, gosh, what a waste of time. I don't need this. I can cut the grass myself and I know how to start the snowblower. It's quite all right. I'll be fine. And right as I was thinking those things, he said, and if you're sitting there thinking that you don't need any of this, he said, we need you. You need to be involved for the girls who do need the help. And look, it struck me like a 2x4 smack on the forehead, thinking, how could I be so dumb? Like, of course. But then also, like, I was like going, well, this is a real leader here in front of me, you know, and yeah, the guy was a real leader because he went on to be the CDS. And there are some problems in the military at the moment, but I'm telling you, there is a lot of good leadership there too. And that man is part of that great leadership that exists there.
Wow. Mark Tingley, commercial insurance with Bald Insurance. Mark would tell you, have another look at that commercial insurance for your business. With the world having gone through and still going through COVID, a second look never hurts. Have you checked into cybersecurity insurance? That's the newest thing that's going to happen. And because our lives are now more online than face-to-face, all the more reason to check out Mark Tingley and all the services that Bald Insurance can provide. So welcome back, Angela. Oh my goodness, the stories you could tell. So the last story that you shared about the commanding officer, while you're thinking, oh, I don't need that, that other people do. And don't you think during this time of a global pandemic that if we all just reached out to more people and cared a little bit more, what a difference we could make in the world.
Yeah.
And Angela, to me, you're just one of those people. But after this amazing career, you ended back up in?
Kusha Boo Gwak.
So there's a story there.
You know, in all of our years together, we didn't talk a lot about where we might go retire. There was always a part of me that thought that that could be fun. But my husband is from Thunder Bay. And it can take a special breed of person to move to small town New Brunswick. So it was never really something we talked about a whole lot. And one day he just kind of said, you know, I could really dig it. I could go back there. It would be fun. And so we bought a cottage. That was kind of like, you know, the transition. And as we spent more time at our cottage leading up to his retirement, he was like, yeah, this could work out quite well. Yeah. So in 2015, he decided that he was done. He had had enough. He was ready for a break. And I thought, well, you know, to be honest, if he is ready for a break, it's probably a good idea for me too as well. Because if he was retired and I was still working, I imagined that all I would do would just work harder. Yeah, really. So we decided to pull the plug, slow things down, and we moved back to Kusha Boo Gwak.
And then he found a passion.
He did.
Because here's the thing, you were thinking, okay, we're going back to hometown, we're going to sit and relax. And what happened there?
Well, he had become very interested in playing guitar. So when his career was at peak stress, peak crazy, for Christmas one year, I got him some guitar lessons and bought him a new guitar. Because he said, I've always wanted to learn how to play. It would be a good stress reliever. So he did that. And he loved it. He absolutely loved it. And then over the years, and that was like, oh, several years before he retired, he acquired what he called GAS. Guitar acquiring syndrome. So he's a beginner player and he's now got like about 12 guitars in the house. And you know, do you know how many
worse than a girl with shoes?
Yeah, right? And like, so you know how many guitars you need, right? Just one more. It's always just one more. Anyways, so I got this idea from one of our friends who was a neighbor, and she had been in the military, she retired, and the present that she bought for herself was a gourmet cooking class from Le Chef Cordon Bleu. And I thought, you know what, that is such a cool idea. And my husband loved working with his hands, and he started saying, you know, it'd be really kind of fun to build a guitar. And I think from this company, Stumac, you can buy kits where the wood's pre-cut and the sides are pre-bent and you just assemble it. And I went, of course, guitars, building. He loves to work with his head. So I did some research and I found in Chelsea, Quebec, which is just across the river from Ottawa, where we're living at the time, a 6-week course with a master luthier. And that was the gift that I bought him for his retirement. And so he went off and he did that and he loved it. He was just crazy about it. So when we moved to Kusha Boo Gwak, he built a little shop in the back of the garage, tiny, tiny little shop, but he got to work right away so he wouldn't lose his skills. He built a couple guitars that first winter. And then when we built our new home, we custom built a shop for him. And he's been building guitars full time ever since.
Wow. So here's the thing, because Angela, I think when we first talked, it was like, he wasn't supposed to do that.
Right, exactly, right? Life doesn't always go the way you expect. You have to ebb and flow with it. So yeah. I thought we would be spending all of our days recreating in Kusha Boo Gwak Park, going biking and hiking and snowshoeing and skiing and all that other business. And I'm free to do those anytime I want, but I will be doing it alone because he is in the shop, because he is having a blast with it. He loves it. Loves, loves, loves it.
So living proof, if you find something you love, it's never like work. So yeah. Angela, then from taking a rest from working that 24/7 of real estate, goes, what am I gonna do?
Exactly. Exactly, right? And so then I started like looking at options, and you know, it's just like the universe kind of delivers. So I went on to LinkedIn, I kind of tweaked my profile, I put that little green thing on there that says open to work, and my good friend, also past client of real estate, also another military wife of another Dragoon officer, sees my profile and goes, Angela's willing to take on work? I need to talk to her. So Alana is at that time chief operating officer of CyDef, the Canadian cybersecurity company that I work for right now. And she says, Angela, can I give you a pitch? I'm like, well, this woman is like, she's a doll. Like, gee, let me think about that, Alana. No, of course you can give me a pitch. So we're on the phone and she tells me all about the company and what they're doing. And I was immediately drawn into that. I'm like, are you kidding me? I will do that all day long. That sounds like such an amazing opportunity. And you know, like that was from a lifelong connection. Right? She just knew me, knew who I was, knew what I was all about. Same for her. Like yeah. Alana is a top shelf person.
So, but think of this, you did put it out there.
You put it out there in the universe, right? Yeah.
Well, and here's the other part. So positive energy, I always say energy flows to where your attention goes. And so here you are, this talented person, likely in not a large metropolitan area, which at one time, because you've been through that, has created some challenges in your life. And yet now it was like, it didn't matter where you live.
Yeah,
you,
for
you
sure.
You gotta love the new world.
100%. And so I'm laughing already because there's a little thing in the story that I didn't tell you. Because I was so bored and I really just wanted to do something. Okay, I'm not making this up, all right? I applied for a job to be a cleaning lady at the peat moss plant. And I wasn't accepted, and I didn't even get a call back from my interview, right? And so when I was talking to Alana, she was like, well, thank God, that would have been a waste.
Oh, I love it.
I just wanted to do something, you know? So that was hilarious. I said that to my husband. I'm like, I got dressed up. I drove half an hour to go like interview for a cleaning job and they didn't even call me back.
They likely said, Angela, the opening for running the business isn't there right now.
Oh, but anyways, so yeah, for sure. So, you know, like it is interesting. I think, you know, life will give you opportunities when you're ready. You know, the real estate one was definitely an example of that. It's something that I had wanted to do for a long time, but the time was never right. But when the time was right, everything else about it was also right. You know, the right company, the right city, the right culture. It was a true joy. And like right now, like the pandemic, I would never diminish the impact that it has had on so many people. My experience has been the opposite. It's created an opportunity that I would not have had otherwise. You know, it's been a blessing for me from that standpoint.
Exactly. And now more than ever, the service that your company provides, people need to be more aware. And the fact that it's Canadian owned and that it does such a phenomenal job. But why not share with people, again, you're living in a small community, but you're making global connections. And so, You really are one of those people, and it's likely thanks to the good and bad experiences you've had over the years of what happens if somebody says no, right? Or if I don't reach out, it's like putting that little thing in there that somebody goes, bingo, like a lottery. Yeah.
Well, you know, like, so entry into this position for me is my first time in a B2B sales role. And so it's been a learning curve. The sales cycle is longer. The prospects that you are talking to are very resistive to cold contact. And, you know, I'm in a new industry. I've been out of work for 5 years. So my network is not exactly what is the ideal. And I had been a BNI member when I was in real estate in Ottawa. And initially what happened was I thought, well, maybe BNI would be interested in our technology. And so I contacted the leadership BNI Canada, and we had a lovely conversation. Their needs were met, but just that conversation put BNI on my radar. And I started thinking, well, maybe I should think about BNI for right now again. And I'm like, not really sure if it's a fit, you know, it's more of a solopreneur type networking focus, but I'll look into it. And the pandemic has made BNI better because of the global network that you have, right? And not just the pandemic. Like, I was a member of BNI in early 2000, and I am again now. And the organization has evolved. They have leveraged technology. They have proven their methods. It is remarkable how advanced the business has become. And it is sophisticated enough to have a lot to offer for someone in B2B sales. It's been a gift to me to join, to meet you, to have your support, which has been phenomenal.
And a gift to us. And one of the things that I love that you said was you went to a global power team, which is, I mean, Denmark just came on. So BNI now has 74 countries. There was enough business for you here that global can wait a little bit.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Like, you know, yes, I love those opportunities that they're there, but like my plate is full. I've walked up to the buffet and I can be plenty busy with people in time zones that are, you know, comfortable for me to deal with. When that's done, and it might never be done, then I'll consider, you know, reaching out to Europe or Africa. But I don't need to right now. There's enough opportunity without doing that.
Well, and having been a BNI member before, because for anybody listening here, for 35 years, BNI has been around. And up until the start of 2020, had always been a face-to-face organization. And the fact that in March of 2020, they totally pivoted, new branding, everything to a totally online platform. Because at one time, if you wanted to make connections in Beijing and you wanted to reach out to BNI, I mean, you could go on to BNI Connect and really search for somebody, but now you can go to a meeting anywhere in the world. And that's whether you're a BNI member or not, you can visit.
Yeah, right? It's extraordinary. And I've done that. I've talked to BNI members from Ireland, from central Ontario. That's not a big deal, not as exciting, but it wouldn't have existed before, right? I've members from Germany I've been on calls with. We had a guest in our chapter who was from Israel. You know, like that, it like, so I think it also of, I have a little Airbnb that we do on the side, and I think of it like, we don't have a lot of culture and civilization in rural New Brunswick, but it comes to us as it visits our Airbnb. But BNI is like that too, right? You can tap into people from all over the world and have these conversations, intimate one-to-one conversations with fellow members anytime you like. And that to me is an incredible way to feel connected to the rest of the world. You're not feeling like you're home in the pandemic, you know, separated from people.
And for the most part, that when you reach out to those people, you actually hear back and it's like, how can we help?
100%. And when I talk about BNI to my colleagues, you know, they're always curious. And I said, look, you have to look at it this way. This is a group of people who have put their hand up and they've said, I agree to the idea that by being part of BNI, my focus is to help others. That is the type of individual that joins BNI. So when you do reach out to them and say, hey, I'd like to meet you, find out more about your business, maybe there's some synergies, they're not going to say no, because they've already said yes as a condition of joining, right? Different mindset.
Exactly. magic, and helping each other and supporting other businesses. But anyway, any last minute things that you want to add, Angela? This has been such a pleasure.
Delene, I'm your biggest fan, you know, really and truly. It's to have you at the helm of BNI here in the Atlantic provinces is a real gift. It's a perfect time for you and Joe to be at the helm. It's an organization that can do so well in the Maritimes. There's so much need here. You have so much to share with things that you've learned over your career, which is pretty remarkable. Thank you.
Listen, so network equals net worth. It's about the connections we make along the way. You've got a story to tell, and we'd love to share it. Have a fabulous day. Thanks so much for listening. What'd you like best about today's conversations and the connections that lead to miraculous outcomes? Leave a review. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to share your story too. So why not touch base with Delene Allen on Instagram, and we'll keep the conversations going.